Want complete protection? Try PhytoGuard, the ultimate nutraceutical combo, a great blend of all the top phytonutrients. I developed it, and it's exclusively available at drhoffman.com. Check it out. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's that time of week again. It's time for Q&A with Layla. Layla Mutin is the nutritionist at the Hoffman Center, and she joins me each week to help answer questions, questions that you, our listening audience, send us via radio program at AOL.com. Just send us a question. And hopefully it is brief. We actually had to discard a question this week, right, Layla? Because it was such a long, involved question that it's almost like a medical consult.
Absolutely.
We would have to sit down for an hour and piece together what's happening with this patient. So it didn't really lend itself very well to our short-form answer format here on the program.
So we would discourage that.
Yeah. We would discourage that.
So, yeah.
Okay, so this week we have a very fine podcast with Karen Sinclair Drake, who is the developer of the Sofida Pro skincare line, which is a wonderful skincare line. We use it on our patients because our patients are very sensitive. Many of them have environmental sensitivities, chemical sensitivities, and some were concerned about the risk of cancer. Actually, all our patients, of course, were concerned about the risk of cancer. We have some cancer survivors, women who've had breast cancer, and we just don't want to expose them to all the chemicals and xenoestrogens in ordinary cosmetics. And, you know, these are cumulative. We apply so many different cosmetics to our skin on a daily basis, and all these chemicals find their way into our bodies. So we're looking for natural cosmetics. Mm-hmm. And also, there's a very detailed discussion of natural treatment of acne in our newsletter this week. So if you subscribe to the newsletter, go to drhoffman.com. And even if you're not subscribing to the newsletter, you can read the article on our website at drhoffman.com. It's about natural treatment of acne. And so that's what we have in store. So what we're going to do today is answer your questions. And what do we have here?
Let's see. We have Martha, who writes in, "Dear Dr. Hoffman, it's a great honor, and I thank you for your time, effort in providing valuable information for our health. I'm a 53-year-old woman and developing cataracts in both eyes. The doctor told me surgery is necessary if my vision is getting worse in 6 months. Would you let me know if surgery is the only option? If not, please advise."
Well, surgery for cataracts is usually not something to be feared. The techniques for cataract surgery have really advanced. And frankly, with the life expectancy of the average American, it's highly likely that they will at some point have to undergo cataract surgery. It's sort of part of like a rite of passage of people these days who reach, you know, 70, 80, 90 years of age. Mm-hmm. And it works out great because at the end, you can even have your vision corrected. You know, you'll see better.
That's true.
So while occasionally, rarely, there are complications and problems, and it's kind of yucky to contemplate getting your eyes operated on with a surgical scalpel, it's really a very precise type of surgery, and they insert an intraocular lens. I highly recommend that if you're on Medicare that you opt for if you can afford, you could pay a few extra dollars to get a higher quality intraocular lens put in that is made to specifications according to whatever vision problem you need corrected, and you're going to end up seeing better. But let's go back to prevention. I mean, Layla, you're aware of some things that can be done to prevent cataracts, right?
I think one of the best things is to take vitamin C and start taking vitamin C from an early age. What I've read about that is that it can keep the lens of the eye from hardening.
Okay.
So that's something.
Right, and antioxidants in general may do that. And some of the very self-same things that help the retina of the eye may actually protect the lens of the eye. The eye formulas that we use are mostly directed at preventing macular degeneration. Mm-hmm. But some of those antioxidant ingredients, you know, zinc and N-acetylcysteine, vitamin C, can protect the lutein, zeaxanthin, may protect the lens of the eye. But in terms of slowing it down, now there are some drops that are offered mm-hmm. that purport to slow the progression of cataracts. They're made with a substance called L-carnosine, which is different than L-carnitine. But I have to say that I'm kind of skeptical about the ability of those drops to reverse cataracts. Because the way I look at cataracts, you know, when you throw an egg into the frying pan, you know, when you're making sunny side up eggs, you know, the white of the egg is clear, mm-hmm. and then with the effects of heat, it turns opaque or white, and that's pretty much what's happening to your eye on a different time course, on a sort of slowed down time course over a period of decades. You start with a clear, transparent lens, and then through a process of cooking, a molecular cooking that's much slower, under the influence of free radicals and excessive sunlight, you know, if you don't wear the right kind of UV protective eyeglasses, if you're someone who spends a lot of time at the beach, or, you know, clearly we're going to see this more in sea captains, you know, they had cataracts earlier, or skiers, people who spend
a lot. And smokers.
Smokers, you know, expression, that the old song, smoke gets in your eyes.
Yeah.
Da 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 da. You know, that's an old-fashioned song that the crooners used to sing. Smoke does get in your eyes, and it actually promotes eye damage in the form of premature cataracts. So there are ways to slow the progression. I don't think it can be reversed naturally. And it's not something to be feared. It's something to say, hey, you know, it's time. Let's pull the trigger. Let's take advantage of modern technology. And because we live longer, we outlive the normal lifespan of our eyes.
That's true. And Martha's only 53 years old. She's going to see better.
Which suggests there may be this. I would suggest that she get checked down in terms of her antioxidant capacity. You know, there are tests where we measure free radicals in the body. And the fact that at 53 she's already got cataracts suggests that there may be something lacking in her diet, or maybe like some problem genetically. She may need more glutathione, absolutely.
Didn't you say once that when you get a glutathione drip that sometimes you tend to see better
yeah.
for a little while?
Well, here's how that works. It doesn't work through the lens. I think it works because it activates the cells that are the photoreceptors in the back of the eye. They have better energetics after the application of the glutathione, or it may be the visual cortex in the brain that is stimulated or improved by the glutathione. But anyway, it's almost like I feel like somebody has wiped off my glasses with a super clean cloth, and colors are brighter and visual acuity is increased when I get my glutathione IV. So
no more mashed potatoes on your glasses. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Well, I'm not good about that.
Okay. Best of luck, Martha. Okay, we have another one from Krista. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, first, I listen to your podcast every day and have become a much healthier person because of it. Thank you. My brother is 19 years old and was just diagnosed with juvenile myelomonocytic leukemia, JMML. He feels okay, but he has spontaneous bruising that appears on the abdomen and the back. The bruising began about 6 weeks ago. His platelet levels are about half of what they should be, and he's mildly anemic. The doctor suggested he receive treatment at a special clinic in Boston, since this cancer is a rare form. I would love to hear your suggestions regarding dietary guidelines, vitamin supplements to battle this cancer. What are your thoughts regarding bitter apricot seeds as a cancer-fighting food due to their high levels of B17?
Well, this is coming pretty close to a complete consult, because I'm sure that when she goes, that she's not going to call a clinic in Boston that specializes in the treatment of this rare cancer, and they're going to get on the phone with her and they're going to say, take this or take that, you know, and offer her, you know, some casual advice. They're going to do a very detailed analysis. They're going to probably do very high-tech treatment, a treatment which may cost, you know, six figures or more because of the expense of what might be required, ultimately, a bone marrow transplant.
Mm-hmm.
which is the way they're going in the treatment of these types of diseases. And what they do is they hit you with very, very high doses of chemotherapy, devastating doses of chemotherapy, virtually kill your immune system, which is necessary before they put in foreign, in effect, exchange your immune system, put in an entirely new immune system in your system. They keep you in a very antiseptic environment because they want to, you know, your immune system is very vulnerable, and the miracle of it is that it can work. And look, I am not for, I'm not a big fan of unnecessary, over-aggressive chemotherapy, but this is a case where this is a bad cancer, blood cancer, that can be fatal, and that where they're achieving some success in not just slowing the progression of death, but actually curing patients, or at least producing a very significant remission. So I would recommend a conventional approach, and if take advantage of this. I'm sure this is a top cancer center, you know, part of the Harvard system in Boston. That's where they really know how to do this. And take advantage of the advances, because people from all over the world flock to places like that. When it comes to nutrition, I would have to, it's, you have to be very careful, because the types of treatment that are given, sometimes you can interfere with the effects of the chemo drugs. So we have to look at what type of chemo drugs will be used. We don't want to weaken them. We actually want them to have their full effect. We do want the patient to have a full chance at optimal recovery with the right nutritional support, key elements of which would be, you know, things you find in fresh fruits and vegetables, and vitamin D, and so on. But I got to say, Laetril is primitive treatment for this.
Which is the bitter apricot seed she's referring to.
I understand,
right?
But I think it's using Laetril in the face of a cancer like this, and in the face of the type of high tech therapy that she's going to undergo, it would be like sort of spitting into a hurricane. You know, if it is effective, it would have a very minor effect on this condition. And I'm not particularly a fan of Laetril. Laetril is like a fad in the 60s and 70s, and it may have some minor activity against cancer, but it's no substitute for definitive cancer care. You know, this is going to sound disloyal to the cause of holistic or complementary or alternative medicine, but, you know, I believe in intelligent medicine, and that means utilizing the best resources that we have at our disposal. So, yeah, I will say this. This is a very interesting observation. Is one of the first patients that was successfully treated with the current regimen of treatment for acute lymphocytic leukemia in a child was my patient. Now, this is a kid who now is in his 30s. Uh-huh. He's married. I think he's an attorney, but he doesn't work in the legal business. He works in the insurance business. He's very successful, and he's well, and he survived this. And he's a pioneer in the sense that the conventional medicine worked. But what I did differently then is I gave this kid a lot of vitamins. Okay. And, you know, sometimes they say, well, don't give vitamins because it might screw up the therapy, reduce the chance of success. If vitamins were to reduce the chance of success, then this kid would not be alive today, because he underwent a very challenging and new type of procedure 25 years ago. And did very well, bounced back, survived, and has been relatively free of health problems afterwards. You know, because this is a very powerful treatment and can be very devastating to the immune system. He's done well. He didn't get a bone marrow transplant, but he got very intensive chemo. And this is childhood leukemia is actually one of the major success stories in cancer. I mean, there's not a lot of success stories in cancer. We're not doing that well in terms of many other cancers, but in terms of achieving breakthroughs for these kids who ordinarily would be doomed, we are saving the lives of kids. They're surviving, and the cancer's not returning. What we have to watch out for in kids who've undergone this type of intensive treatment is secondary cancers, because their immune system has been sort of hammered, and their immune system is suppressed. They are a little more likely to get unusual cancers, or sometimes usual cancers as adults, because their immune system is suppressed. So anybody who's undergone successful treatment for Hodgkin's disease or ALL or so on, those are patients I like to see, because then we like to rebuild their immune system so that they have better, their immune system has better cancer surveillance, and they can stay healthier and live normal lifespans.
Terrific. have a better outcome.
Yeah.
That's always the goal. Okay. do we have time?
Yeah, let's take a look. Yeah, we absolutely do have time. What we do is we segment these into two parts. So this will be part one. In a few minutes, we'll take a break, and we'll go to part two. But ask another question, please.
Okay, we have writer Valerie. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. As a result of years of listening to Health Talk and now Intelligent Medicine and following your supplement recommendations, I feel that I'm in very good health. For many years, I've pretty much followed the suggested doses listed on the bottles, but lately it's occurred to me that those recommended doses are for the average person in size and weight. Since I'm only 5 feet tall and 105 pounds, I'm wondering if I'm taking too many of the good supplements you recommend. In particular, I'm concerned that an excess of all the many fat-soluble vitamins and supplements may build up in the liver. Should I be concerned? I don't do this, but I've been told that it may be a good idea to take a week off of my supplements every month.
Okay. This, is, I think, is a reasonable question. And it's also asked in a spirit of openness to supplementation. Clearly, this person's a fan of supplements, so mm-hmm. she's not trying to bash supplements, as we sometimes hear from the medical establishment, or these days from the press. You know, supplements are unsafe, supplements are dangerous. But there is the question, you know, I mean, how much of this stuff can you take, and should you take a break? So what do you think, Layla?
Well, first of all, the fat-soluble vitamin, she does bring up a good point. We advise against too much vitamin A. That could eventually be toxic to the liver.
Right.
And the way to dose vitamin D intelligently is to get your serum levels checked at least twice a year, at least once after summer, once after winter. Both of those levels will be different because of the time of year. I think that's a good idea.
So here's a question. And, you know, please answer it honestly. In your experience at the Hoffman Center, how long have you been? 8 years now? Almost eight?
Yeah, since 2005.
Okay. We have treated perhaps, you know, certainly hundreds, perhaps thousands of patients mm-hmm. during that time. And we've given them big, you know, vitamin programs, like big, very generous programs, like handfuls of vitamins in some cases, and very high doses of vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
How many patients have you seen become toxic on vitamins that we've given?
I've not seen any. Zero.
Okay.
Zero.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah.
Because, and in fact, we measure vitamin D, and I have seen a couple of people go over what we consider the normal limits of vitamin D. In one case, due to another physician prescribing, mm-hmm. and in one case, when we prescribed, I was a little surprised that that patient had a higher level. But the patient was asymptomatic. There was no symptoms of vitamin D toxicity. It was just sort of a warning sign in terms of a high vitamin D. We said, okay, cut back. You know, which is quite a remarkable track record because what physician can say, I mean, I've been doing this, you know, 25 plus years, you've been here 8 years, what physician can say, even over the course of 8 years, that they've never made a patient toxic with any type of vitamin prescription?
True.
Oh, actually, we did have a patient who I don't know why he did this, but he took his vitamins in the dark in the morning. And so he reached for a bottle of something, what he thought was something else, but he ended up taking 20 niacins.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and so...
That could not have felt good.
Called me up, and I said, please go to the emergency room and get checked out, because... So he flushed for about 6 hours.
Oof.
And was otherwise okay. So that there's an instance of that. Look, we know that certain vitamins can be toxic. Let's go through that. The vitamin A at high doses.
Mm-hmm.
We now think that you probably shouldn't take more than 25,000 international units of vitamin A
mm-hmm.
daily.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, we used very high doses for acne, for example, but that
right.
wasn't a good idea. It can affect the liver. It
mm-hmm.
can cause a cracking of the skin at the sides of the mouth. It
mm-hmm.
can cause headaches. It can cause dry, flaky skin. It can cause palmar on the palm, like symptoms of like a flaky red palm.
Mm-hmm.
It can create problems. It can also cause birth defects, and we now think high doses
yes.
of vitamin A can be promote osteoporosis. Okay, so that's number one. But we never give more than about 10,000 now international units of vitamin A.
Mm-hmm.
Our multi has very little in recognition of that. We generally don't give vitamin A as an isolated nutrient.
Right.
Okay, vitamin D, yes, it can cause toxicity, but we measure it. That's
mm-hmm.
easy. We follow the numbers. If the numbers get a little too high, we tell patients to pull back. Niacin, as I said, can be toxic.
But it's water-soluble.
Right. It gets out of your system, but it can damage. You can damage your liver if you take it. And we do see some patients sometimes taking niacin, even, you know, prescription niacin from their other doctors, conventional
niaspan.
Doctors. Niaspan, where they do get elevations in their liver function tests. Sometimes they can get a little nauseous. They don't get jaundiced, but they get a little sick feeling. That's sometimes when niacin is combined with a cholesterol-lowering medication, you get that effect amplified. So that's another one.
Yeah.
B6 toxicity, we're told about B6 toxicity, that people can get balance problems, they can get tingling and numbness.
Mm-hmm.
I've not seen it.
I haven't seen it.
And I don't. I sometimes dose pretty high, but not, you know, we don't give patients like 1,500 or, you know, 3,000 of B6.
Mm-hmm.
We give them moderate doses of B6, maybe, you know, 200-300. We don't see it with those levels of B6.
That's true.
What else, you know, could be toxic? I mean, you know, here's the toxicity that I see. The toxicity that I sometimes see is just the sheer volume of supplements, and people have very sensitive stomachs. It's sometimes people just taking handfuls of supplements, and they complain of GERD, reflux, stomach pain, and sometimes we have to say, hey, you just have to stop your supplements and see if they play a role in that. And occasionally
right.
it's the supplements that are irritating the stomach.
That's true. As a matter of fact, in this week's newsletter, I'm writing about your frequently asked questions on supplements, how to take them properly.
Okay.
And all of that. So that will address a lot of questions there.
How to take them, when to take them.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's go back to the question. The question is, it has actually been advocated by some people that formally people take a break, that they go 3 weeks on, 1 week off of their supplements, or that they take, you know, let's say hypothetically, 1 weekend a month or 1 day a week off of supplements. Is that a good idea?
The only time I've gone off of my supplements is when I've forgotten to replenish them.
Right.
That's really it. And the other thing is, if I know I'm going to be getting some sun in the summer, I may lay off of my vitamin D supplements for a while, or at least through the summer, and then restart them again. The taking a week off, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't think there's benefit.
Right. I'm not sure that there's necessarily a benefit. One, there's a theoretical issue with vitamin C, that people get a little bit accustomed to a higher dose of vitamin C, and when you withdraw the vitamin C, then you crash a little bit.
It's almost like pulling the rug out from under your immune system a bit with vitamin C.
So, I don't know. I guess that could be an argument against taking outside vitamin D, that you create a vitamin D, vitamin C, C as in cat, dependency. I don't know. I don't really see that as a big problem.
No, I don't see. Valerie, we hope that answers your question.
All right, this is a good inflection point for us to pause, and we'll consider this part one of our weekly Q&A with Layla. When we return, we'll answer a question from, Layla, tell me who we're going to answer.
From Susan. More about supplements.
Okay, so
more about supplements.
Questions about supplements when we return to part two of this week's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.